I listen to everything, and not just to the music itself, but to the hearts behind it.
As usual, pleasure being on the bill with Claude Loop and all the boys, Pauline and Epcot. The boys gonna take a little bow right quick, so give them a nice hand. Stand up, Billy Kyle, right there. They're going there. Buddy Catlett, right there. Larry Glenn, right here. Eddie Shue, right there. Jules Brown, right here. Danny Barcelona right here. The old flat bowl right here. Thank you. Thank you. Before we say goodnight, let's go in this last one now, everybody. Da 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 da. Hello, darling. Hello, darling. Why they said to him back, but you been down. It's well, darling, I can tell, darling. You keep blowing, keep blowing, you still don't stop. I see the room playing and the band is playing. One of our favorite tunes, the way back when. Oh, yes, why? Take off, rap, fella. Orlando and MG Lafayette died. Darling, I forgot my baby. Got you, I forgot my baby. Darling, I forgot my baby tonight. Good night.
Welcome, everyone. This is Valerie Michelle Oliver on Val. The program is Sunday Brunch, the first and last song, here on Creator's Parrot Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Again, I'm Val, and I'm the host and producer of Sunday Brunch, the first and last song. And today, the show is coming to you from New Orleans. Yes, this is my first time here in New Orleans. I'm here to listen to and to do some coverage for the show of the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. And it's a beautiful day. It's a Sunday here and blue skies, and I'm getting ready to go to the Jazz Festival and enjoy some great music. And also, I want to tell you just a little story to set up for today's guest. Now, normally what I do when I have a show is I usually a month ahead, a couple of weeks ahead, I identify who I'd like to speak to on the show, and I contact them or their manager or their publicist, talk to them, get the okay, get the approval, get a couple of songs to play, and everything's all set and ready to go. Now, in this case, for some reason, the Spirit moved me not to follow that particular way of doing things and said, listen, just go down to New Orleans and just have some faith and some trust, and you're going to, find people to talk to down there, artists, and, you know, just go down there with your heart open and things will happen. So I was at the airport in Newark, and I saw some people with some instruments, and I went over to them, and I began a conversation, and actually one of the musicians said to me, I think I saw one of the Neville brothers get on the plane. So I thought, one of the Neville brothers. Now, I'd never met a Neville brother, and to be quite honest, I didn't really know a lot of the music of the Neville brothers, but something said, listen, just get on the plane, walk up the aisles, and just say you're looking for a Neville brother, and say it loud enough so that, you know, maybe someone will hear you. So I'm walking through first class, and I'm saying, I'm looking for a Neville brother. And as soon as I said those words, someone said, I'm a Neville brother. And it was Mr. Charles Neville. And that's a true story. And from there, he was so kind and so generous with me. He gave me a business card. He said to give him a call. And he put me on the guest list for a very special family gathering of generations of Neville playing together for the first time, called the Nevolution. And with that, I'd like to introduce everyone to Charles Neville. How are you doing today, Charles?
I'm doing really good, thanks.
Well, great, great. And first thing I want to do is I want to thank you again one more time for just your generosity and your willingness to speak with someone and share your life and your family's life with someone that you just met. Is that something that you usually do? I know you're a kind person.
Well, you know, when we perform, that's what we're doing. We're sharing something of our lives with people that we haven't met.
Great. Well, as I have told you, I've already broken the first thing that I usually do for the show, which is the first question is usually, what's the first song you remember hearing? So let me quickly go to that question. Thinking back now, just, you know, off the top of your head, don't want to get too deep with it, what is the first song you remember hearing, or either if you want to share, what's the first song that had an impact on your life?
Well, you know, I was thinking about that, and the first one that I actually remember hearing, although I'm sure this is not the first one I heard, was Nellie Lutcher singing Fine Brown Frame. My mom used to play that record. Fine Brown Frame by Nellie Lutcher.
By Nellie Lutcher. Now, do you remember any of the words or the lyrics to that song? I'm totally not familiar with that.
No, all I remember was that she said, he's got a fine brown frame, and I wonder what could be his name. And that's all I remember of it.
I wonder what could be your name. Well, you know, that's actually a good that's actually a good segue, you know, for another question about what's in a name.
because your name is Neville, and it's your family name, and so many, as I learned the other day, so many generations of your family are involved in music, in the music industry. Can you tell us from your own perspective, what does music mean to your family? And I know that's a big question.
Yeah, well, you know, when the first people in our family that exposed me to music were my parents, who played music. My uncles and aunts all sang, danced, played some kind of instrument, but they didn't do it professionally. It was done because it was something that they enjoyed doing. And when I first started playing, the reason that I wanted to play was because I saw, you know, I could feel this energy when the music was playing, and I wanted to experience that and see if I could get tuned into that myself with an instrument. So, you know, we got into the business as, you know, later we started playing music, and then later we started playing gigs, you know, doing it for just a really small amount of money in the early days. But the main thing of it was that when we played in front of an audience or with an audience, that we were sharing something with the people, and we could feel the energy going out to them. We could feel the energy coming back from them. And especially when we see the people dancing, we could actually see the energy then.
And right, that's, you could physically see it.
Yeah. And so that's how we got involved in it. And then we started doing it really as when we first started doing it professionally, we were still like we still all kept our day jobs, and you know, did the music was the thing to do for love and for fun, and you know, for money we had a job, and that's always been like the approach to playing music with the majority of the New Orleans artists. You know, there were people who had hit records, big international hit records, who still had their job as a body and friend of man, or as a cook, or as a cab driver, or something. And, you know, it still felt, well, you know, music is the stuff we do for the spiritual reason, and to make money, we work. Because music, playing music, didn't feel like work.
Yes, I'm sure that that's when, you know, whatever the particular career, you know, move that anyone makes in their life, whether it's as a musician or whether it's, you know, as a contractor, an architect, you know, what's so very important is that it doesn't seem like work when you really love it and you're passionate about it. So you would say that that's spirituality, the spirit of the music, enjoying the music, sharing the music with others, this is really what brought you to music individually and then also together as a family. And now would you say that's also correct to this day with the younger generation? Because a little bit later after our interview, I'm going to be playing some of the interviews I did and actually some of the songs that Jason gave me to play. Would it be, in your estimation, is that continuing now with this generation?
Yes, I'm sure it is. You know, having seen those guys when they began to play music, it was first they were just like getting together and writing songs and doing stuff just to be doing it. You know, and then as they got older and, you know, like Ivan, Aaron's son, I remember Aaron had a piano in the house. He didn't like try to get Ivan to take piano lessons or encourage him to play or anything. Just when Ivan got to a certain age, he just started playing the piano and taught himself. And, you know, not because he was thinking of becoming a world famous rich piano player, but because it felt good to play the piano. And really, that's how all of the younger guys got into it too, just to be able to express whatever that is in us that we can express through the music.
Now, how does it feel to be passing the torch? How does it feel to be passing the torch to the younger generation? And then, if you would, give us a sense of, you know, your own family, the youngsters in your family, and you know, what they're up to.
Yeah, well, you know, again, just like with Aaron and Ivan, we didn't like suggest that they become performers and musicians. It was something that they took up because they wanted to. Like my daughter Charmaine could sing, and so she sang. And then later she got into doing performing, and she's been doing it ever since. I have other daughters they can all sing, but they opted not to do music professionally. I have two sons who, one of them is a musician, but he's also, he got into break dancing early on, and then they started doing this really acrobatic dancing. And he was out with the Black Circus for a while with those guys doing that, and now they still do it down in the French Quarter on the weekends. And whenever I go and see them, I'm amazed at what they do. You know, they play music while they're doing it, and it's dance stuff that's happening, but it's this really incredible acrobatics that demand that a person be in tip-top physical shape in order to be able to do it. Some of it looks impossible to me to do. and then I have the two younger kids of mine, who the older one, who's 13, plays the piano. The younger one, who's 7, plays the drums and the guitar. And and there are grandkids who, like one of my grandsons, was there at the performance you were at. The really big guy who was singing with Jason and Aaron Jr.
Mm-hmm.
That's my grandson. That's Charmaine's son.
Oh, great, great. You know, I realize that I need to give just a little bit of history about the Neville brothers. This show, as everyone who usually listens to it knows, the focus is on music, the heart behind the music, humanity, of the performer, of the artist, healing and spirituality. There's loads and loads and loads of interviews that have been done, I'm sure, with many members of your family. That's, more about the history and, you know, the music itself and technical things. So this show has a little bit of a different, does have a different focus. But I want to just read a brief history for those people that don't know anything about you and your family. And this is really, I'm just getting this off of the Wikipedia online to make it go a little quicker here. So it says here that your group, the Neville Brothers, dates back to 1976 when the family, Art, Charles, Aaron, and Cyril, got together to take part in the recording session of, and please help me out with this word, the Wild
Chapatulas.
How do you say it?
Wild Chapatulas.
The Wild Chapatulas. Wow,
yeah.
What a word. The Wild Chapatulas, a Mardi Gras Indian group led by their uncle, Big Chief Jolly. And this experience led them to form the group the following year, and your debut album was released from Capitol Records in 1978. And then in 1988, you guys released Uptown from EMI, featuring guest artists like Branford Marsalis, Keith Richards, and Carlos Santana. And the following year saw the release of Yellow Moon from A&M Records, produced by a fellow named Daniel Lanois, looks like here, or Lanois, I'm not sure how to say his name.
Yeah, Lanois.
And then Lanois. And then the track Healing Chant, the track from that album, won you guys Best Pop Instrumental Performance at the Grammy Awards. And then it says here, through the health problems of Art Neville, the band kept a low profile in the late 1990s until the early 2000s. However, you guys made a comeback in 2004 with the album Walking in the Shadow of Life from Back Porch Records, which was your first newly recorded effort in 5 years. And, hey, they're pretty on top of things here on Wikipedia. It says all brothers except Charles live in Massachusetts, have been living in New Orleans, but suffering the damages of Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Cyril and Aaron moved out of the city afterward. And so that's pretty much a quick little background here taken from Wikipedia, you know, about the history. And there's numerous albums. People can go to Google and type in the Neville Brothers, and you can look up and find out all that information pretty easily and quickly online. Now, I want to go back here for a second, and I guess it's just normal to talk about Katrina whenever anyone talks to people that are here in New Orleans. And you were not here, were you, when the hurricane hit?
No, I was not. In fact, none of us were. We were on tour. We were actually in New York watching it on TV.
Okay. Oh, that was a blessing that you weren't here at that time. Now, I've talked to a number of...
our families were here.
Right, your family was here.
You know, we were watching it on TV, and, knowing that, you know, wondering what's happening with everybody else because there were no communication.
Right. Now, was everyone okay? Eventually
we learned that everyone had survived, even though they had been through some really trying times, like having to spend a few days in the Superdome and having to swim through the polluted water and lots of really difficulties that they had to overcome or get through.
Okay. You know, I have talked to a number of people down here, including some members of your family, the Neville Brothers and the younger generation, about what's on their heart right now. It's been, 2005. It's been a number of years since Hurricane Katrina hit, and I hear a lot of different things. Some people are very unhappy still to this day with how the government responded and with what's going on today in the city, and others are a little bit more upbeat and hopeful. And I just wondered what's on your heart regarding what you would like to happen with the city today, what you see happening, what you would like to have happen.
Well, what I see happening is recovery in some areas and recovery on certain levels and no recovery in other areas and, still lost. The poorest people not really getting any real help, and a lot of new people with money moving in and things being built up and living conditions being beyond the means of low-income and middle-income people.
Hmm. Okay.
There are some organizations that are doing really good stuff, like the the organization that Brad Pitt has and Habitat for Humanity, they're really working in the Ninth Ward, helping to rebuild and helping people to get resources.
Okay, one of the songs that I chose to play today is one that you wrote called Healing Chant. I'm just trying to think of what year Healing Chant was written. Now, that comes from the album Yellow Moon, correct? And that album came out
in
1989, and here it is, 2010. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to play this song that you wrote and dedicate it, the energy of this song, to the healing of New Orleans, and in particular in the ways that you just described need to happen. And could you just, before I play it, set this song up a little bit, tell the listeners a little bit about how this song came about and the intent for this song.
Well, the song came about while we were recording the Yellow Moon album. We had done several tracks songs that there were no, you know, we were writing some of the songs as the session went on. And we had this one really good sounding rhythm track, and no one had a song for it. So we played the track, and I played the soprano effects on it. And the way it happened, like I had never played with the track. I wasn't sure what the changes were. And so we played it, and I was like playing it with the sense of I'm trying to figure it out. And when it was done, when we finished that, when I told Daniel and Juan, and I said, okay, let's do one. And Daniel said, hey, we got it. That's it. It's not going to get any better than that. So, and they were right. But you know, wait,
wow.
I wanted to say something else about the history. You know, they said that first album in '88, that was not the first one. After Wild Chapel Tools, we did one called The Neville Brothers, and that was in like that might have been '78, '79. Also, with recording, us had a hit record in New Orleans in 1954 called Mardi Gras that still gets played every year here. And
okay, but you dropped. Then, I'm sorry, you dropped out for a moment there. What was the name of the song that Art recorded?
Mardi Gras Mambo.
Okay, yes, Mardi Gras Mambo. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay, and then he and Aaron recorded stuff in the 50s, and then it wasn't until the 60s that Aaron had the big hit with Tell It Like It Is. But, they, you know, we had been performing since the early 50s and recording since the mid-50s, and there's stuff all the way in between up to the Wild Sabbatoulas. But prior to the recording of the Wild Sabbatoulas, Art put together a band called The Meters that was recording with Alan Toussaint. And I moved away. I was living in New York. Aaron was touring with Tell It Like It Is. And Cyril and Art were in the band, The Meters. And it was in 76 when we got together with our uncle that we all four came back together. And that was the beginning of the Neville Brothers band as it is now. Let's see there. And there's all kind of compilations. There's live album. There's Live on Planet Earth, one that we recorded while we were on tour around the world. And there's Live at Tipitina's that was recorded back in the maybe 80s, the early 80s, at the main Tipitina's club here in New Orleans. So there's more than what Wikipedia listed there.
So that has to be revised, because anybody can go on with Wikipedia and add to that. So thank you for giving us a more accurate reflection of that, you know, what actually has happened historically. And so I'm going to play now a Healing Chant. And again, for those who don't know, Healing Chant actually won a Grammy Award for Best Pop Instrumental for the Neville Brothers. And also the other two songs that I have to play today are from the other album that one of the other albums you mentioned, Live on Planet Earth, which was recorded in 1994. So we're going to go ahead and listen to this dedication, or the song that I like to dedicate with your permission, of course, to the healing of New Orleans and the ways that it still needs healing.
Okay,
here
very
we go.
Good.
Healing Chant. Thank you. Ah, that's beautiful.
That's
beautiful.
The healing chant.
That's the healing chant. Oh, yes. That goes out to New Orleans today for the healing of the city in the ways that it needs it. Now, I just wanted to talk to you also a little bit about the spirituality of your family that, you know, of course it's in the music. It has to be in the music. And your personal journey spiritually. I was fortunate to meet the chief of, and you're going to have to help me out with this because I know the American word is the Choctaw Nation, European description of the tribe. And so if you can just, because I could just feel, you know, that connection the other evening when I was at the Nevolution multi-generational performance at Tipitina's the other night. So give us a little bit of background about the spirituality, the roots, the heritage of the Neville Brothers family, and then also give us a little bit about your own personal journey, your own spiritual beliefs.
Well, you know, as kids, we were one side of our mother's side of the family was Catholic. Our father's side was Protestant. And so we got to go to both churches, sing in the choirs, hear the music, and feel the energy of you know, both of those religious ceremonies, as well as be exposed to certain aspects of the Native American and African spirituality, and get the understanding that everything is powered by the Great Spirit that moves through all things, which has been described with various names by different religious groups and different people around the world, but it's the same thing, the energy, that the creative energy. And through, you know, growing up and going to church and learning the stuff that they taught in those religions was one thing, but then I was fortunate enough to actually experience some esoteric things. Like my grandmother used to tell me that I was born with a veil over my face, which meant that I had, she said that means you're going to be able to see spirits and you'll have a heightened psychic sense, and that proved true over the years. I did have, you know, those strange experiences. But then I was able to get in a class. I was working at a college up in Vermont, and one of the courses was a comparative study of world religions. And I got to really delve into that. And then I met a man by the name of Kapal Singh, who was from India, who was a spiritual teacher and leader, and learned a lot about the viewpoint and the focus of spirituality from their vision. And then I studied the teachings of the Buddha when I got involved with the Chinese and Japanese martial arts. And the one realization I came to was that, hey, they're all saying the same thing. Some they use a little different words, and they have different names for the creative spirit, but it's all the same stuff. And so I realized, you know, one of the things that I learned from some of the teachers that I and the books was that the creator resides within everything, that you don't have to go some place to find it. You know, that helped me with developing my own philosophy that, well, you know, I try to live my life according to the teachings set down by the Buddha and by the different religious leaders, including Jesus Christ and the other great leaders, religious leaders who came in the world. And the main thing is that there was several just basic principles. Number one, non-injury to any other living creature. and live your life honestly, and in order to receive love from the world and from the spirit that is love, you have to be able to open your heart to let it in. And one of the things I discovered that I had to really work at was, you know, playing music. I mean, we'd get on stage and I would have to wear dark glasses to play when I was young, because when I played, I knew I was exposing my soul, but I was like kind of had this kind of fear of doing that. And I found out later that's the fear of having it being rejected, you know. But then I found that doing that, trying to close it in, prevents it from getting in. And so I actually worked on, you know, doing meditation and practicing the Tai Chi and the Qigong and all the different practices that help to, you know, different yoga forms that help to open the chakras and the path inside that allows connection to the highest level of spiritual vibration. And music is one of those connections. You know, when I was first learning, I used to have the feeling that, well, okay, I'm trying to play this music, I'm creating it, I'm making it happen. But then later I came to the realization that I'm not making this, it's coming through me from somewhere else. And once I was able to give myself up to that and stop trying to make it but let it flow, then what I played became much more, what had, I think, more energetic, had more of an impact on myself and on people who, that I shared it with, people who heard it.
Just letting it flow instead of trying to make it happen is what's working for you.
Realizing that, hey, I'm not making this. This is coming. This is being given to me as a gift.
So would you say, it's funny because I noticed that, you know, you have played with Carlos Santana, and one of my mentors is a very gifted healer and shaman, loves to go to Santana concert because she says he's a shaman with his music. How he comes out on the stage.
Yeah.
He went through she said he is a shaman with the music. He comes out on the stage, he brings in the four winds and the four directions, you know, and then he's like off. And it sounds like you do something, you know, in your own way that's very similar. You're a shaman with your music and how you approach it, being a vessel and a channel, you know, for the sound and the music to come through it. Have you ever been described that way? Do you see yourself that way?
I've been described that way. And, yeah, I see, again, like I said, I don't see myself as, like, it's not me that's doing any of this. It's like I'm just, like the horn. I'm just an instrument that the energy can pass through. It comes into me and then from me into the horn and from the horn out into the universe. And so, yeah, I guess in that sense, I could be considered a shaman.
Okay. Now, for other musicians that might be listening and they're saying to themselves, or even healing artists, I know healing artists do listen as well, and just people in general who maybe for the first time they're hearing some of these concepts and so forth, but specifically for perhaps songwriters and musicians who, you know, are trying to write or trying to get it out or trying to express themselves and maybe thinking, now how do I do that? How do I get to create the way that Mr. Charles Neville creates? What sort of guidance can you give people that might be wondering?
You know, there are pieces that I have composed that I sat and thought about and kind of constructed them to a certain point, and then something takes over and helps to complete it. And then there are the songs that I have written that just, they have come to me whole, and I just had to write it down and play it. I didn't have to figure out what goes where or how it's going to be, because it, whatever it was, the inspiration or the information had just was just there for me. And I think that's what happens with any artist, like when you want to make something new and different and start working on it. At some point, the energy, you connect to that energy that has everything in it, and so that the pieces that you want, the sounds that you want, are there somewhere, and they've got to come to you. And you can make that happen by actually beginning the process of playing or writing something.
Mm-hmm. I've talked to a couple of people who are writing music, and some of them award winners or nominees for awards, and especially it seems like, I was going to say with the younger generation, but now I'm thinking back, not so much all the time, just the younger generation, people who feel frustrated with what they feel the music industry expects of them. And I guess more of the traditional than the independent music industry. And they feel that they must compromise, what it is that they want to create, the way that they want to create it, the way that they want to write it. And people, I've heard people say, I don't even know if I really want to continue in this industry because I just so much do not like the business practices and some of the expectations. Now, you've been in the industry for a very long time. You've worked with record labels. What would you say to a person who is feeling very frustrated and feeling like, I can't be creative here in this industry? I might as well just, go get a job. I was going to say working at McDonald's, but you know what I mean. Just go get a regular job.
Yeah, well, the what makes the problem is, like you said, in the industry, if the purpose for trying to create something is for the purpose of making money in the industry, that puts them under the control of the industry, whereas if they're making whatever they're doing, they're creating, writing music, writing songs, or for to express what's in themselves and what comes to them, then that's the real stuff. And so, like it used to be that in the industry that, yeah, if a person came up with something unique that was an expression of themselves, yeah, that made it attractive, that made it, there were people in the industry who understood that, hey, this is something that's going to touch the people who hear it, and it's going to, become something. Whereas now there's formulas that the newer people in the industry have come to decide, well, this is what is selling now, so if we're going to do something, it's got to be this. And that's the catch-22 of being involved in the industry. If your purpose for being in it is to make hit records and hit songs, okay, you've got to do what they want. If the purpose for doing it is to express what's in your heart and what's in your spirit, well, then you do that, and maybe you'll make some money from it, maybe you won't. Maybe one of your pieces will get to be recorded and get really popular. Maybe it won't. But if the focus is that I'm doing this for the money, then that's going to prevent you from being able to freely do the creative expression.
Now, this is what gets me, Charles, about the quote-unquote music industry professional. Now, people in the music industry, they're just human beings just like the rest of us. And, change, as we understand it, comes from the inside out. We've been talking about spirituality and so forth. And people who are in the music industry are just like us. I mean, aren't they? I mean, I have sometimes a little difficulty saying, well, changes are occurring all the time. And certainly a lot of changes have already occurred in the music industry. The whole independent industry, came out of, through, around, under, and over, traditional ways of dealing with business. And there's new forms happening all the time. And aren't we as human beings evolving and becoming new forms? And as we evolve and become new forms, isn't that affecting the music industry as a whole? So what some of the issues are that people see as problems today, isn't it possible that it will get better simply through this evolution?
In some areas and on some levels, yeah. But because the that aspect of the industry that determines what is presented to the population as a whole as the music of the day is under the control of these certain corporations whose only purpose is to make money. You know, like, yeah, there's the independent companies, the independent radio stations, the college radio stations, and, you know, all kind of independent media that can put real music out, you know, real spirit music out there. But the main stream media only wants to put out some music that, and just the art period that they think is going to make them money.
Okay,
and,
well,
yeah, people, you know, you say they're just people like us, but they're not artists. They're people who went to school to learn something that for the purpose of making money.
Okay, that's the bottom line. It's just the making of the money. And at this point, it doesn't appear that that's going to change unless those individuals change.
Right.
Now, I want to go and play another one of the songs that you've written, and we're talking about spirituality and history and heritage. And the song that I've chosen is Her African Eyes. Can you tell us a little bit about that song, what was going on that led to the creation of your writing this particular tune?
Yeah, you know, I saw a picture on the cover of a National Geographic magazine, and, you know, I did a painting of that picture. I did a pastel drawing from the picture of a woman in Africa, in northern Africa, in the desert. And there was something about the way in the photograph, the way her eyes had this light. And after I did the painting, I was looking at it, and I picked up my horn and started playing, and this melody came out. And, like, what I was seeing was there was this, oh, I don't know how to describe it, like the notes that I guess I kind of chose them, but not consciously. This is what came out. What I think were representations of the beauty that I saw in this person's eyes. And that's
okay.
How the melody to that song came about.
Okay, so again, this is Her African Eyes, written by Mr. Charles Neville. This is on the Live on Planet Earth album that was released in April of 1994. Here we go, Her African Eyes.
saxophone.
Thank you.
I could play this song every morning just to get me started with the day, feeling beautiful and black and just wonderful.
Okay.
Just listening to that tune. I think, you know, not just the women of color, African women, it just has that kind of energy to it. And I also want to say, you were talking about the light in her eyes, and I just would like the listeners to know that Mr. Neville here is so very humble. He himself, you yourself, are a being of great light. A friend of mine who attended the family gathering, the Nevolution, happened to how you had such a powerful effect on her, and she didn't quite understand it. All she knew was that your smile was never ending, was eternal on your face, and this incredible light just emanating from you. And she's absolutely right. You definitely are a being of light, and we're also blessed to be sharing this space, you know, here on Earth with you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, thank you. you know, like, I'm not the one who's making the light. The light is just coming into me from wherever it comes from.
Well, I and I'm sure your listeners, your fans, the people who will be discovering you are just so happy to have such a bright and beautiful man and talent. Great talent, you know, in our midst. And I want to wind down the interview now and, you know, let you get back to your day. I know you have things going on with your family. I wanted just to find out from you and have you share anything from a humanitarian perspective that is on your heart right now. Just regarding anything, whether it's New Orleans, whether it's this planet, whether it's someone who needs a blessing, prayer right now, just anything that you would like to share that's on your heart, and then we'll go to the last question for the interview.
Well, you know, one thing is I did recently a benefit concert for the Haiti Relief. And, you know, there's people there in such dire straits and that still need every kind of help, and especially thoughts. I think the energy of people's thoughts going out with the understand, with the idea that we want to send some positive energy to people who are in bad situations. And, like, that's always kind of in my mind, that I always want to send out positive energy and help at any level that I can, like even, you know, seeing a person on the street who's got the little sign saying Vietnam vet homeless and hungry, you know, give him some money. And, you know, like that's the way to help that person to survive physically, but also along with whatever donation they give, to give a smile and an outpouring of positive energy from the heart.
Okay, beautiful. And the last song, the last question for you actually has to do with the last song, and that is, what is the last song you'd like to hear before your life ends here on Earth?
I would like to hear Aaron Neville singing Amazing Grace.
Perfect, just perfect. Well, once again, thank you so very much. Very, very much, Charles, for agreeing to be on the show today, talk about your life and the life of your brothers, the Neville brothers. I know the Nevolution is happening, and for those of you that would like to know more about the Neville brothers, certainly you can go to their website. You can Google Neville brothers. It'll give you more than just the website. It will come up, MySpace. There's a lot of different places. Some brothers have Facebook accounts. So, you know, just type it in there and, you know, you'll get to a number of resources. And with that, Charles, thank you very much again. Have a beautiful, blessed, loving day full of lots of love and light.
All right, thank you. You know, you can tell your listeners that also if they go on Facebook, there's a lot of Neville stuff on Facebook.
Yes, a lot of Neville stuff on Facebook. Great. All right, you heard that, listeners. Okay, so we're out. You've just listened to an interview with Charles Neville of the Neville Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. Sunday Brunch, the first and last song is the show on Creator's Parrot Channel. Wow, what an interview that was. Now we're going to move on to a special guest. I'm going to play for you now an interview that was conducted the evening of Nevolution, the multi-generational event featuring Neville Brothers, family, friends, and I had an opportunity to speak with Jason Neville, the son of Aaron Neville, after his performance that evening. And I'm going to play that interview with him, and then after that, one of the songs, perhaps two of the songs. Actually, we'll begin with a song by Jason, and then we'll end the interview with a song that he recorded with his father, Aaron. So here we go. Jason Neville. The song is called Superstar.
Man, I'm a superstar. Doing what I wanna. Living like a superstar. Like Kim's action. Superstar. Nothing really matters.
Going on stage, I'm really Michael Jackson was a big influence on me, you know. really wanted it to be more like, I mean, that's what I really wanted to be like Mike. I really wasn't really bothered in the Neville tradition, but I couldn't actually avoid following the tradition, so I was stuck in this family, so I had to do all of this stuff that's, you know. So I'm like, I don't know, I gotta like a different, my sound of music, and, you know, I give you a CD, you have to be the judge of it. Because I do all kinds of music, so I'm just like, you know, I'm just like a big pot of gumbo. I just take all of the songs and just put it together, you know.
I like the sound of that, a big pot of gumbo. Yeah, that's who you are. Also, I was just wondering, I talk to people about their spirituality. That's what's different, a little different about this show, because there are a lot of people that interview music artists and talk about the history and talk about, you know, the kind of music that they do and all that kind of stuff. Whereas this show is much more interested in the heart of the person that I'm interviewing, your concerns and interests in terms of humanitarian, you know, kinds of things that are going on. So I was just wondering, what is your religious or spiritual beliefs or background?
I grew up Catholic, I mean, but I went to all kinds of churches. I go to Full Baptist Church, and I just believe that, you know, I believe that Jesus died by our sins. I believe in the Bible. Put it like that, I believe in the Bible, and I just believe in doing, treating people how I want to be treated. And I love animals, I love people. I don't like killing, you know. I'm against all of that stuff there. It's about.
What about your music? I've talked to a lot of different artists, you know, over the past couple of months. And it's funny, a lot of them say that, you know, when I ask them, well, what is it that you want people to get from your music? What kind of message are you trying to get across?
I play music to heal people. I mean, it's just healing music. It's music that people, you know, experience and stuff that people go through. And, you know, my experiences, I just create whatever God put in me, whatever comes out of me, I just let it flow.
You know, I remember reading something that a musician wrote, and he talked about when he was young, he learned very early that, you know, he could control, like, people's moods and what was going on in the house, you know, with his music. And he said, you know, once he kind of hit the road, he started doing shows, he goes, I play music to make people eat, to make them happy, to make them sad, to help to make them buy drinks, you know, to make them have sex, to make them do. Is there,
for whatever, you know what I mean? You can make love. I don't believe in having sex to the man of God. I have love making music. I don't have anything that's vulgar or just out the box nasty. So that kind of music, I'm not with that. I don't degrade people in my music or nothing like that. I'm just, you know, I speak about love. I speak about peace. I speak about pain. You know, I speak about solution to problems.
You know, other members of your family that I've talked to tonight, you know, have briefly touched on, you know, where their heart is with this city, with New Orleans, and some have said things that they don't like about things that are going on, and others have almost said a prayer about, like, where they want things to go. Just wondering if you could, like, just say a little bit about that, your own belief.
If I can say a little bit about, well,
where you like the city to go, anything you want to share that's on your heart.
I just would like things to go fair. I would like people to treat people fair. And I would like things to get better, you know, for everybody. I mean, you know, for homeless people, for people that's suffering on drugs. I mean, I'd like to be able to help people, you know, in any kind of way I can. The young kids out there that don't have nothing to do, I'd like to have places for them to go and do destructive things, you know, so that they can have a good outlook on where they want to go in life.
So you feel
like
the young people are.
Yeah.
What is the last song I would like to hear? Probably one of my songs.
One of your songs? so many favorite songs. I'm about to get back with you on that question.
That's quite all right.
You got my contact. You hit me up on Facebook. I'm at the Jazz Fest May 1st, in Russell Baptiste. Russell Baptiste and Blast featuring Jason Neville. And I also got, like, I play at a place around the corner. I sing cover tunes. I sing rock songs and stuff. At the famous door on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I don't want to take up any more of it. Let me give you a hug. Nice to see you. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Thank you.
That was Jason Neville performing with his father, Aaron Neville, One-on-One. That song, I'm sure many of you will remember that it was originally sung by Hall and Oates. Hall and Oates. And this time, the two family members, the senior Aaron Neville and the younger Jason Neville, teamed up for that rendition of the song. Okay, that's our show for today from New Orleans, the Jazz and Heritage Festival. I want to thank again Charles Neville and Jason for taking some time after the show the other evening, the Nevolution show that kicked off the Jazz Fest. It's going to be happening annually now. This was the first time, and it's going to kick off the festival every year. Also, if you don't know, I want to share with you the fact that the Neville brothers also close the Jazz Festival every year. It's a tradition here in New Orleans. So come back next Sunday. This is part one that's concluding now. Next Sunday will be part two, which is the last weekend of the Heritage and Jazz Festival that ends on Sunday. So when is that show? I don't have a calendar in front of me. That is next Sunday. I believe that is Sunday, May what? Sunday, May, help me out, somebody, anybody. That's Sunday, May 2nd at 3 o'clock p.m. The Neville brother I will be interviewing is Cyril Neville, and I'm actually going to do my interview with him this afternoon at the Jazz Festival. He's performing with another group in which he performs, and I'll have an opportunity to speak to him. And also next week you'll hear a brief interview with other members, children, the younger generation of Cyril's family, Ladies of New Orleans, and you'll also get to hear from his manager, Reuben Williams. So it's going to be a great show. Come back next week. Thank you for being here, and I hope you enjoyed our show for today. Bye-bye.
I listen to everything, and not just to the music itself, but to the hearts behind it.